As I understood the progression of things, there was the country boys. Of course, there's the three little country boys first,
sure.
And then their sister dropped out, and then there was the three of them, and then when they picked up Billy Ray and I think Roger Bush, uh-huh. maybe, then it became the Kentucky Colonels. Is that
well? They were the country boys, really.
Roger was there when they were still the country boys. As a matter of fact, I was just listening to some tapes on the way up in 1962 when Roland had gone into service, and the band was Roger and Billy Scott Hambly playing mandolin and Leroy Mack and oddly enough, at that time Leroy was doing all the MC work. You know, Roger's was known, you know, traditionally as the MC for the Colonels. At that time, Leroy was doing it all. So, the year that it became the Colonels, I couldn't tell you. You know, Billy would probably be a better one for that. But
I have his phone number. I'm going to talk to him about it.
Yeah, give him a buzz. He'll be more than glad to talk to you.
This is before the Dillards actually got there.
Mm-hmm.
The Dillards came over in 61.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden Gate Boys hadn't been around yet.
Golden State.
There wasn't much going on before the Dillards was there, was there?
Well, actually there was. There was quite a bit going on. I mean, the Dillards, I remember that, now, the year the Dillards came out, I was at the Ash Grove the night I had gone down to see who was on the bill. I think it was the Colonels and the Greenbrier Boys, and the Dillards came into town. I remember because they came to the Grove that night. I can't remember what year that was. I could be wrong, but I think it was like...
I had that in here.
Well, I think it was 63 or 64. I don't think it was quite that early.
Oh.
I could be wrong, but...
Okay, well, let's go with 63 then.
Yeah, and, sure, if you want to, come on in. I've got the money, but, as I said before, there was an active bluegrass scene going on. You had to look a little bit harder for it. The Colonels and the Country Boys were playing in places, once again, far removed from folk music. That was available in that college mm-hmm. scene and the high school scene. They were playing down in places like Lakewood and El Monte and an area of Los Angeles that was primarily populated by the people who can't come out, at least by the parents of the people who had come out to work in the war effort, where the big defense plants were. And that's where that music kind of stayed, and it was hillbilly music. I mean, you know, in Pasadena, you hear the Kingston Trio, and if you went down to Lakewood or Alamani, you could hear the Country Boys, or you could hear country western music. You didn't hear any country western music in Pasadena, in the upper middle class white neighborhood. There's no place you could hear it.
Really?
You went down across the tracks, which are the freeways, and you heard, that's the place you could hear it. And so they were part of that scene, you know. They didn't really become part of the concert scene. It was something that was imposed on, you know, by the folk boom. You know, all that stuff was happening. People forget that. You know, it's like, you know, bluegrass wasn't a big part of folk music out, at least in Southern California. It was country western music. A big different thing. It wasn't, you know, under the old microscope, you know.
Could you see a change happening at all? It's kind of hard to detect things at that stage, but now you can look back on it and start categorizing.
Sure. Well, I mean, but even then, it wasn't too tough to see the fact that, you know, what people were, you know, the hootenanny syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Was singer, songwriter, kind of, you know, kind of things, and the bluegrass scene was. it was just it's, it's a much stronger music. It's a much rawer music. And it was, by the time, you know, Flatten the Drug started doing college concerts and things like that, I think it was the greatest thing that ever happened to them. I'm sure they did, too.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, from expanding their audience, but second of all, you know, being able to play, you know, nicer places, more money, less travel time. And it was flattering to have people all of a sudden examining, you know, the music and looking at what you did, and all of a sudden, you know, you were part of academia, you know, as opposed to just doing the gig.
Scott Hambly was doing his academia thing about mm-hmm. then, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. But that's not where, you know, Ferenc and Roland were from. They were doing it for a living, you know.
Roland was boss, wasn't he? He was
mm-hmm.
the...
Mm-hmm.
He liked this... He heard some records, I guess. That's just about his only clue mm-hmm. toward bluegrass.
Sure, like most people. You know, I mean, there are very few people... Well, I can't say that's not right. But most people out on the West Coast got their first exposure to it from records.
Now, you know,
and that's part of the... That's
to what we have today as a West Coast type of bluegrass. You get the Grismans out here, mm-hmm. you get the... Well, Tony Rice did his
sure.
instrumental stuff up there with Grisman for a while.
Well, and the Gazette was all part of that sound. You know,
yeah.
the Gazette was out here for a long time. All that, and the